Hello, hedonists of the world. You're not going to comment on that rabbit, huh?
I was having trouble catching up with the volume control, dear.
Okay.
But now we're okay.
We're all right. Now, I guess we should announce that everyone's listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and our subject today is a recent trip we had to Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, and we wanted to find out something about why the food and drink and dining scene in Portland is so interesting. And it turned out we had the opportunity to pull together a group of people who are involved in a special event called Indulge.
Which explains hedonists of the world.
Yeah, which you'll be hearing about in the panel shortly. And then a panel of, six or seven people, all of whom have a different kind of food or drink-related business in Portland, Oregon. And we asked them a simple question. Why do you think that the food and drink and dining scene in Portland is so interesting? And they all gave us a variety of answers, all of which help explain the situation there. So we thought maybe you ought to hear that first. Then we're going to go on to three of the fine restaurants that we had the opportunity to visit and where we had the opportunity to interview the chef. So that's today's program. So let's get it underway.
Well, here we are once again at the Jupiter Hotel, where I guess we were 2 years ago. And we're going to be talking about the event that we experienced the last time we were here, called Indulge, which was indulgent, lots of fun. And we're going to be previewing the event itself, and then we're going to actually do a round table with you assembled here, people in the food and beverage industry in Portland, Oregon. And so we're going to be, first of all, starting off, Shannon Pradish. And you are the CEO of the hotel.
CEO of Scene Marketing Group.
That's right.
Yes, we work with the hotel. We're also managing all the event production this year for Indulge.
Okay. Now, you know the back story of this whole event. Maybe you could just give us a brief introduction.
Yeah, so I'll let Chad, who's here with us today, to describe a little bit about the beneficiary, which is PEAR. But
what is PEAR?
PEAR is a nonprofit here in Portland that helps homeless and transitional youth.
Okay.
And so he'll describe what they do a little bit more in depth. But Indulge, first and foremost, is a fundraiser for a nonprofit. In the past, it's been EcoTrust, and this year it's PEAR. But then secondary, it is what it sounds like. It is a event that is all about indulging in the best of what Southeast Portland has to offer. So we have a lot of different everything from restaurants to wineries, distillers, brewers, and some of those people are here today. The format's a little bit unique in the sense that a lot of nonprofit events, say you go and you've got the silent auctions and a lot of people talking and speaking about the nonprofit. Little bit different. You show up and you get to eat and drink as much as you want with this thing. It's a pretty big party here in Portland. So when you first walk into the Jupiter's Dream Tent, the courtyard space, all said and done, holds about 500 people, and we pack it to the gill. We've got two different rows of restaurants when you first walk in, some of the biggest names here in Southeast Portland. And then to the right, we've got the Think Tank, and it's a smaller event space right off that big courtyard. And we turn that into kind of a fun media room where you can see the Twitter feed of everybody talking about the event as it's happening live. We've got a photo booth set up in here, and Yelp is sponsoring that room. In the next event space, we've got the Dream Box, and in that space, we basically are turning it into food cart land. We've got some of the bigger...
Well, that's considering Portland. That's
right. Yeah, we have to have the food carts here. Along the other side of the courtyard are some of the hotel rooms. We spend about 2 days yanking out all of the furniture in those rooms, and we put them into storage, and we allow the distillers to each have their own room, and they actually every year, unbeknownst to most people, have a internal competition between each other as to what the theme of the room is and how to outdo each other with that.
Fun.
Last year, Deco Distilling did a tiki you know, thatch room and had a whole tiki bar and works with that. So I'm very interested to see how they're going to outdo each other this year. Along the driveway.
It's highly creative.
It is very highly creative. It's high energy. Yeah. We've got a DJ spinning the entire time in the event. And then along the driveway, we shut that down. We're pretty much taking over the majority of the property. Along that side of the driveway, we take out, again, all the furniture in those rooms, and we've got a brewer in each room, and we've got a couple of those guys here today. We've got on the driveway a lot of seating so people can hang out and chill and, you know, enjoy the scene. And then on the Doug Fir patio, the Doug Fir Lounge is on property. It's a we've got two bars in there, a restaurant, and a music venue underneath the entire property here at the hotel. And so we take part of their patio away from them for the night. We throw up tents there, and we've got sorts of wineries there. We've got cheese and chocolate. And then last but not least, we've got a hydration station where we've got Water Avenue coffee there, Voss. We've got kombucha and dry soda. And so we've got, even for the people that don't necessarily want to have alcoholic drinks, they can be there too.
Now, Shannon, there's a website that people can get information about the event? Go ahead.
Indulge at thejupiterhotel.com. Indulge, through the website, you can purchase the tickets, and early bird tickets right now are $45.
That's a bargain.
Yeah, for all that.
and the other thing we forgot to point out is, what year is this?
It's 2011, so yes. It's September 22nd is the date of the event, and it's going to be from 5:30 to 9.
Great. Okay, and the Jupiter Hotel has been a sponsor for
This is the third year. Yeah. Okay. This is their only event that they do.
You have something you want to say about the Jupiter, because I found it rather extraordinary.
What did you find extraordinary about the Jupiter Hotel, Anne? Tell me about it.
The complimentary earplugs in the rooms.
Not only complimentary earplugs, but also complimentary condoms. Yeah, We're a slightly different hotel.
It is a different place, and it certainly is fun.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. And we were at the event 2 years ago. It really is a fun event. Everybody has a great old time.
Well, it definitely fits the type of person that likes to stay here at the hotel. We definitely target 21 plus. With the music venue on property, we've got all 81 rooms are pet friendly. But this is the only event that the hotel puts on their own. And it really, I think, ties into part of what the goal of the Jupiter Hotel is, and it's to promote community. So,
yeah. And it does that. I mean, I can see the camaraderie among all the vendors that show up and the people attending. Let's move to Pear. Could you tell us about Pear?
So my name's Chad Ferlino, and I founded the Pear Barista School about 3 years ago with Pear, and I've been working with them as kind of an unpaid director for the past 3 years. And PEAR is an extraordinary organization here in Portland that stands for Project Education, Art, and Recreation. And their mission is to provide a space for homeless youth to begin gaining a sense of normalcy in their lives. PEAR is special and unique in that they deal with post-risk youth, which most of us are familiar with the term at-risk youth, which means kids who are in danger of becoming addicted to drugs or getting kicked out of their house, leaving school, etc. PEAR works predominantly with kids who are already long into that cycle and have are currently battling addictions, homelessness, sexploitation, all kinds of issues that we don't see in our everyday lives. PEAR provides breakfast and lunch by some of the best chefs in Portland cook for those kids on a daily basis. They only accept donations of the best food that's available, so most of the vegetables and meats that they use are organic from local farms. Everybody pitches in. They've got a great list of people that contribute on a daily basis. And basically what they try to do is just create a space where kids who are marginalized in every way and have been marginalized in every way can come in and experience a sense of normalcy. So you come in and someone hands you something for breakfast, asks how you're doing. Very basic things that we take kind of for granted in our daily lives. But to these kids, it's the first window of opportunity to see themselves as a person that's worth interacting with other people.
It sounds like absolutely one of the most marvelous organizations I've ever heard of.
It's completely inspiring. Their space, they have a beautiful new building on Northwest 6 in Flanders, which is an art gallery where the students sell their art that's also co-hosted by a local artist each month. They have a giant kitchen area where the kids can cook. They can work with the volunteers. They have a huge list of volunteers, over 60 people a week.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, the website for PAIR is www.pairmentor.org.
P-E-A-R.
Correct, yes. P-E-A-R.
M-E-N-T-O-R.org. .org. Okay, yes. Very good. Well, I'm sure everybody will check it out further on the web. Do our next stage, the round table here. We're going to be asking, we're going to pass the microphone around and ask each participant name, business, and also why everyone's thriving in this environment and why Portland has become such a magnet for food lovers and wine and other beverage lovers, including coffee, I might add. Okay, we'll start out here.
My name is Matt Mileto. I'm a partner at Water Avenue Coffee Roasters here in Southeast Portland. We're really excited to be part of this event this year and really have for years and commend Chad and what his organization does. I think that's really special. But we are a micro roaster and retailer in the industrial east side of Portland. We roast seasonal small batch coffees, showcase them in our retail bar as well as throughout Portland at select wholesale environments. Our partners have all grown up in Oregon, lived in Oregon, lived in the Portland area for many years, and have seen the evolution of not only quality coffee and all other beverages, beers, distilleries, wineries, but we really feel proud to be a part of this quality movement and to have such a dedicated consumer base who truly appreciates something specialty over many cities I've been to. And I think Portland really is setting an example and maybe leading the forefront of craft beverage as well as culinary here in the small town of Portland. So as at Water Avenue, we're real happy to be, again, involved in Indulge. We stand behind what it does, and we're happy to be part of what a lot of people call the coffee capital of the United States Portland, Oregon.
It's certainly taken over from Seattle, hasn't it? Okay, let's move it on here. Next up.
My name is Morgan Miller. I'm the Portland brand manager for the Ninkasi Brewing Company. We make Northwest style ales for the masses. Why Portland, the question is why Portland became such a food and drink mecca.
Yeah, why?
I think another being a lifetime Portlander, I think a lot of it had to do with that we were isolated for a long time, and so we had to do for ourselves. And so we were always used to, when I was growing up, you ate local, you had local companies, you were used to it, and that it seems to have just continued on. I remember in the brewing industry that Portland was unusual when all the large breweries were consolidating. The local brewer, Henry Weinhardt's, came out with small batch beers back in the early 70s. And so everybody got used to drinking small batch beers, okay, even before the craft brewing movement started.
So you think that you were sort of on trend all this time, but trend finally caught up?
Yes and no. I think we were definitely used to eating local and sourcing local. That has various sociological reasons, but that I think the quality has definitely improved.
You have a lot of creative talent here, yeah.
A great deal.
And you're attracting more also.
And part of that is that it's fairly low cost to get started in Portland,
yes,
or relatively get started compared to other large cities.
And here's another reason probably that's helping to put the city on the map.
Yeah, possibly a little bit. My name is Don Barassa. I'm the Portland Community Manager for Yelp.com. And what we do on a community-by-community basis is we try to build strong communities both online and offline and connect those communities with great local businesses. And Portland was one of the smallest markets we went into the earliest because it was such a good fit here because of the great food and drink scene in Portland. And I think that has a lot to do with the confluence of a couple factors. One is the proximity. We are kind of – we're not a huge urban area, so right outside of Portland you've got farms for local meats, local vegetables, all sorts of artisan products coming right out our back door. So a lot of pioneer chefs like Greg Higgins were able to go source everything in their restaurant from their backyard. A few pioneers brought that to a community that is a tight-knit community. Portland is one of the tightest cities around. We're not a bedroom community. Everybody lives downtown, close in, a lot of great neighborhoods. So people don't go home from their day jobs downtown to the suburbs and eat at chain restaurants. They're constantly looking for great local food. So a combination of the ability for pioneering chefs to get that food to people and people really desiring that artisan craft stuff in that strong, tight-knit community fashion, it really helps support and all these chefs who are moving to town and wanting to be part of this amazing thing. And as Morgan from Ninkasi noted, in such a cheap place to do it.
Yes.
I think
affordable.
All those things contributed
you
to such a...
You don't have to say cheap, you say affordable.
Inexpensive, yeah. Inexpensive.
Yeah, it's really funny. We talked to one of the top chefs in town just yesterday, and he said when he was making a choice to come west, the choice was San Francisco or Portland. And he said, quite honestly, I couldn't afford to live in San Francisco. I can't afford to live in Portland. So that was the first reason I chose. And since then, everything that I've seen has validated that. So he's a denizen of the Saturday morning Portland Farmers Market, which we went to on Saturday for a couple of hours. It's just such a marvelous place to buy. And no one said that around the table. But I think that in and of itself is also a huge factor that you can buy for yourself at home, or the people who supply you through a restaurant can do the same thing.
Go on the sweet side here with Saint Cupcake.
Yeah, hi, I'm Peter Swenson. I work for Saint Cupcake. We are a bakery who makes cupcakes, but also a whole lot more, cookies and other types of pastries. We were founded 5 years ago, and it seems like the Portland food scene has grown up a lot since then. There's been a lot of changes. Our owner and main baker has always kind of done what she wanted, like made food that she likes, and as it turns out, a lot of our customers like that food too. And I think that independent spirit is part of Portland's nature. Like, we have a lot of great local music.
It is a different spirit, yeah.
Yeah.
I can sense it just even as an outsider.
It rains a lot here, so we're stuck indoors. And so people are forced to come up with things that make themselves happy.
And eat a lot more sweets.
Yeah. So I think that's possibly part of what's so great about living here. And
you've been to... to indulge before?
No, this is our first year, and we're really excited to be part of it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. You'll see.
Mm-hmm.
And we have next up.
I'm Adam Cassie. I'm one of the owners and founders of Burnside Brewing Company. We're just a block down the street from where we are here at the Jupiter. We are only in our eighth month of operation, and we're really flattered that the Jupiter invited us to this event. We had heard a lot about it, hadn't been to it yet. So we're really excited to help pair as well.
But you were also a native?
No, I'm not a native. I've been here for about 15 years.
You don't qualify
then? Yeah, I don't qualify. But yeah, so I'm the home brewer living the dream. I've got two other partners. One of them is the brewmaster, and then my other partner, Jay. Jason's the brewmaster, and Jay is the sales and guy that we've got. So... yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and we're excited to be a part of it. We'll add on to what Morgan from Ninkasi had mentioned about the beer scene. I think a couple of other things that help make us what we are is Beervana. One of them definitely, you know, in addition to what Morgan said, but our water is amazing. The city water comes straight from Mount Hood, so it's very good water to brew with. And then, of course, we've got a lot of hops locally grown. And that kind of ties into the theme of what a lot of the restaurants and other pair or other indulge participants, you know, the local part of it really adds to it.
How would you categorize Burnside's beer? What's it trying to be?
What we're trying to do with our beer is make the best beer we can and have it all be very drinkable. We like to drink two or three beers at a time. Sometimes more, and so we like to make sure that they all go down nice.
Well, we don't have any restaurants represented here, but there's certainly major chefs and restaurants participating in this event because there's no shortage of really great food. One other thing that's not come up that I think is probably true, we also don't have distillers, do we? When talking to the distillers last time we were at this event, the local laws, I mean, and permit situations and everything, facilitate both small business and such things as distilleries, whereas some of the eastern cities, and also food trucks, some of the eastern cities have nowhere near that kind of an open-minded climate towards this sort of small business.
Yeah, I'm Ezra, also working with Burnside Brewing.
Are you a real Ezra?
I am real
That's
Ezra.
That's our son's middle name, named after his great-great-grandfather.
Wow. Yeah, I'm a real native Portlander.
Good.
And I think what exemplifies Portland is there wasn't really a big industry here. There's not a ton of sunny beaches. There's no big.
Really?
The weather is weather's okay, you know. So I think people had to get creative. And we found that we had all the ingredients here that we could source and come up with something. And people really learned to appreciate, you know, what we have. And then other people across the country saw that and have flocked here. And I think Burnside Brewing really exemplifies that culture of combining the best of beer, but also with food. Everything is kept in mind. How does beer pair with food? How does food pair with beer? Which is really part of the Portland beer culture, I think. And these things go better than most people expect, I think. Instead of just having wine with your beer, wine with your food, you can really pair beer almost better. There's actually a much broader flavor profile range from sweet to sour to savory to dry. So there's infinite possibilities there.
This is just such an interesting town from a number of perspectives, but let's just give you a clue to wind up the day. We were having dinner on Saturday night at a local restaurant called Park Kitchen, and we struck up a conversation with the people sitting at the next table, and we asked them what they did, and we told them what we did, and they said, "Oh, have you heard about the party at the distillery tomorrow? They're having a closing of summer party. And it's crayfish, all you can eat, and all the spirits that you'd like to try." And we said, this can't be true. But sure enough it was. We were proud of ourselves because we went there on the bus to go to this event. And there were people from all over who were just walking in and enjoying aquavit and gin and lots of other things going on. And then a couple of people said, "Oh, are you going to the event, the brewing event that's like six blocks over?" So apparently this kind of thing is happening almost every weekend.
Well, I'll tell you, the listeners have enough incentive just from listening to all your comments to actually come to Portland, Oregon, make sure we say the Oregon on it, and also for the adult. And where to stay. Remember, Jupiter Hotel.
And we'll be right back after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. And boy, didn't we have fun with our next guest.
We did.
Yeah. Picture us in Clyde Common Restaurant in the Ace Hotel at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning, since it's the only time we could adjust our schedules to accommodate, with this wonderful chef cooking for us a three-course dinner meal, not breakfast.
Yeah. So once again, Chris Domeno, thank you very much. And here's the interview.
Well, we've found a place. I have had the happiest meal at a place called Clyde Common, which we'll explain later, from a chef named Chris Domeno, who's going to be talking to us right now. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for that three-course wonder.
Oh, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Now, I was curious about the name Clyde Common, and it's in, I should mention, the Ace Hotel.
That's right.
In Portland, Oregon. And it was named for the original hotel?
Right. In the early to mid-1900s, it used to be called this building was the Clyde Hotel. And so this room that we're in now, the dining room, was the common room of the hotel. So hence the name Clyde Common.
Now, we were discussing the decor, which is a little bit difficult to describe. I'm still not sure about this one wall, whatever's covering it here. But we decided it was going to be kind of rustic industrial.
Right. That's right. It's very Portland. And actually, I should add that most of the stuff in the dining room was made by the owner. Nate Tilden, the bar, is made by him. A lot of the furniture was made by him. You know, it's all sort of homegrown, which sort of adds to the character. Nate Tilden.
Now Nate owns the restaurant.
Yes,
but not the hotel itself.
Right, the hotel and the restaurant are affiliated, but neither one owns the other. Right.
So that explains the name of the place and a little bit about the decor. And there's a second story level. Your bar has become a big issue. You have a what are we calling it now? It's no longer a mixologist. It's no longer a bar chef. It's now bar artist.
It's all about the craft cocktails. He's Jeffrey Morgenthaler, our bar manager. Very, very creative, very knowledgeable. He comes up with some amazing drinks. I mean, you've heard, we were talking before about his barrel aging drinks.
That's the trend.
Yep, it is the trend now. And he's one of the sort of the pioneers in this country of it. And then also our extensive whiskey list also, which, you know, we get a lot of rare bottles that people in Oregon don't have.
So you're standing out in that regard as well as with your cuisine. Let's back up a little bit and say, you're not from here. You are a New York person.
It's true.
Okay. And in New York, we didn't talk. Did you train anywhere in New York? Or?
I've been cooking since I was 15. I'm 28 now.
Why were you cooking since you were 15?
I just sort of knew. It was what I wanted to do. I knew I needed a job where I had to work with my hands. I knew I could never be behind a desk. And it's just something that I always sort of took a shine to. And I was lucky enough to have a brother who was a bartender in New York City.
Oh, really?
At a restaurant, which is now closed, unfortunately, called La Madeleine, which was on 43rd Street. And I started one summer, started interning there. And just sort of fell in love with the whole thing. And it's been sort of a ride ever since. But I went to the Culinary Institute of America.
You did go.
I got my bachelor's degree. And just working in, you know,
different... Did you enjoy it? Everybody writes books about how horrible it is.
I liked it. I felt like it was this kind of situation where you get out of it what you put into it. And, you know, I definitely put a lot of work into it. And because of that, I feel like I got a lot out of it. And I actually got my bachelor's degree from
That's
there.
That's very good, yeah.
In hospitality
so
management.
Covered.
Yeah.
Now you met a couple of really important chefs along the way after that, too, right?
It's a true story.
Go ahead.
So before I came here, I was working at Blue Hill at Stone Barns.
Which is fabulous,
with
yeah.
Dan Barber.
And he's just, yeah.
He is an amazing man.
Exactly.
Worked there for about 2.5 years. Before that, I was at Telepan. With Bill Telepan for about another 2 years. For that, I mean, I worked with Bill off and on for many years.
And they're both guys that really demand quality ingredients.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The local, support local farmers and producers and so forth. So you said that was one of your attractions to coming to Portland because there's so much of that here.
Yep. It's a great town for, I hate to use the term anymore, but the farm-to-table culture.
I thought there was a new term, but I can't remember what it is right
now. I just can't keep up anymore.
nor do you have to.
Exactly. I'm just doing what I do. Portland, so I needed a change of scenery from the East Coast. And I wanted to go West Coast. I had heard lots of stories about the West Coast, and I was deciding between San Francisco and Portland. One of my best friends had just moved out here before I did, and I came to visit him for a week and just sort of fell in love with it. I even came during the winter when it was raining, and I still loved it. And between San Francisco and Portland, I could not afford San Francisco. An apartment was stupid money.
It's worse than New York, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. So decided on Portland and packed up my car, got a truck, drove a truck across the country with
without
my car
job.
On the back, without a job, and took 7 days and came out here.
It took 7 days. Wow.
We got caught in a snowstorm right after Denver, and then we got caught in another snowstorm as soon as we got into Oregon. So it was a rocky trip, but a lot of fun.
And when you and I were chatting about the accessibility of all the wonderful products here and the farmer's market, which is called the Portland Farmer's Market,
right.
Is it? And we were there, and it's in the top 5 best farmer's markets in the country.
Right.
And somebody said it was actually the biggest. I don't know. There are 200-plus vendors. And we just loved it. Of course, we ate our way through there.
Right.
Yeah, so you were saying about how one of the things is competition for getting the most unusual ingredients among chefs here.
It's definitely, at least maybe I only consider it a competition. I like to have a lot of things that a lot of the people don't have or can't get or won't get. You know, I've tried to work with a bunch of local farmers to have them grow stuff just for me.
And you go along with that?
It's been a slow start, but I'm slowly getting into it. You know, I've had certain types of lettuces grown just for me. We're lucky to have a lot of friends through the restaurant and a lot of farmers who are friends around in the area.
But you want to get to where you said, like at the Telepans, that producers would knock on your back door.
At Blue Hill and at Telepan, you know, people would just show up with stuff. You know, people would show up with, you know, 20 pounds of mushrooms that were, you know.
Yeah, especially Blue Hill, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Its location.
Somebody would come in the back door with seven trout that they had just caught. What do you want to do with it? You know, it was really interesting. And that's also, you know, part of why I enjoy writing the menu the way I do, because I can, you know, I can reprint my menu every day. And because of stuff like that, with people showing up with things, or if I go to the market that morning and find interesting things, I can just change the menu for that day and use it up.
There are a lot of foragers in this area. I've often wondered, if somebody knocks on your back door, how do you know that what they're giving you is not dangerous, especially like with mushrooms?
I only really go through, with mushrooms and stuff like that, I only go through people I trust. I have two or three people who I know I can count on. And they know that once they have stuff, they just come and they drop it off. You know, we have that kind of relationship. I tell them, you know, if you have 20 pounds of chanterelles, just bring them. Don't even call me. Just bring them.
So you trust that they know what a chanterelle is?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And, I mean, mushroom foraging especially is huge here.
Well, you grow. I mean, look on.
The climate.
I wish I had everything. A secret morel patch here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I bet you don't know where any are.
Nope. They do not tell me anything.
They will not tell you. They go to their grave with the secret.
Exactly.
Well, let's turn our attention to what we ate, because I loved every mouthful.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
How about if you just sort of explain a little bit about each dish, starting with this late August vegetable platter.
So that dish, that was sort of, there was a lot of inspiration behind that. That came over Christmas. I was fortunate enough to work at Del Posto for a day.
Oh.
And
it's gotten better lately, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I was that place. The way that place runs is unbelievable. I sort of can't
get
over it.
Yeah.
It's enormous. And just the way they're doing the food, it's really. So they had a salad that they were using, you know, a lot of just sort of market vegetable. I think they were even calling it like the market vegetable salad or something like that. And it was just a beautiful array of vegetables. And I saw that. I was like, why can't I do something like that? So came back here, a couple months went by, because this was in December, and in December, there's not a lot growing here. When the first farmer's market opened in March, I was at the first one, bright and early, 8 a.m., you know, ready to go with my hand truck.
A lot of dandelions.
Oh, yeah. A lot of sunchokes.
Sunchokes, yeah. Right.
And just sort of going from stand to stand and seeing what everybody had and picking the nicest of what everybody had and got it all back here. You know, I spent tons of money, got back here, and it was sort of like, you know, all right, what do I do with it? Now what? And racking my brain and, you know, talking to my sous chef, it's like, why can't we just sort of put it all together on one plate and treat everything as best we can, and so we can show it off as best we can? So that's why, that's how that dish came about. And then, so today, you know, we had all kinds of stuff that I purchased yesterday at the farmer's market. There was the baby squash, there was the purple cauliflower, the baby carrot, the brown cherry, the green fig, which is the first of the green figs, very cool. The zucchini blossom with the little zucchini on it.
Yeah.
So just like, it was really just walking around the market and seeing what looks best.
But you handled each one. You put it on a bed, you spread it.
Right, of truffle yogurt, the yogurt we do make here. And yeah, it's sort of like the base that sort of everything goes. So, you know, almost like a crudité kind of thing, sort of vegetables and dip.
Oh, it's way better than
But every vegetable is treated differently. Some are roasted, some are blanched, some are kept raw and just marinated, some are marinated for a long period of time.
Just comes together beautifully.
Exactly. And then, and just very, you know, light garnish at the end. Tonight on top there was
purslane
and baby buckwheat sprouts.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah, there are a lot of really interesting grains being used here.
Oh, yeah.
This might be a good place to put in your thoughts on vinegar, because I mentioned it was very obvious that you have a sensitivity to different vinegars and how they're used, and they really brighten your dishes.
I think it's sort of an integral part of most of the food that we do here. It's really a key seasoning element to everything. And this is sort of a recent realization of mine, that it really is important to be able to use that to reflect how good the food is, if that makes sense. And definitely different types as well. You know, in the dish today, there was really nice sherry vinegar, white balsamic, along the lines of acid, lemon juice. We use all kinds of different citrus juices, lemon vinegar, things like aged balsamic. We have a huge cabinet of different vinegar.
Do you make your own yet?
We do not make our own yet.
But
you will. We've been playing with the ideas.
Yeah, you will.
With the idea, but we haven't started yet.
Now, let's move on here to the fideos.
The fideuá.
Fideuá. I knew I was pronouncing it wrong.
I'm so American and I call it fideos. So that dish came about right after I took over as chef here, having a conversation with the owner and talking about what we were going to do with the menu. He said that he had always wanted to see a fideos on the menu. I remember sitting at the bar with him and, you know, saying, you know, great, let's do it. I love that stuff. You know, it's amazing.
No, not a clue.
And then I had no idea what it was. So I went to the drawing board and I did a lot of research and found a lot of recipes and sort of combined a lot of different ideas and eventually came up with the dish that you guys had today.
You know, at its most basic form, it's really a pasta.
It's a pasta similar, like a 1-inch bucatini, kind of, sort of.
Toasting's important. Right?
Toasted, yep. Cooked like risotto.
Okay.
Really, and then baked in the end.
And we had, with our squid, scallops, and sausage.
Yep.
And we had squid ink vinaigrette and aioli. It was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Then we had, in fact, I'm taking extra home.
Yeah.
For breakfast. Okay. That's my idea of breakfast. My favorite breakfast is leftovers.
Great.
Then a beautiful, beautiful dish was this prosciutto-wrapped trout.
A whole fish has been on the menu at Clyde Comet since the restaurant's been open, since day one. There's been a whole fish in some way or form. And whole fish at the size that we want to serve is becoming more and more scarce. In Portland, a lot of the fish off the Oregon coast and things like that are actually going to Japan or, you know, Asia or somewhere else. So fish is getting harder and harder to find here. So I have to sort of deal with what I can get. So what's plentiful around here? But trout. We're fortunate to be near.
We love trout.
Yeah.
That's good.
I mean, it's a great fish. So we get beautiful golden trout from Idaho. It is farmed, but it is sustainable. And it's the exact right size to feed one person. You know, it's about a pound or so for a fish.
It's a nice, tidy size.
Exactly.
Very good.
Exactly. We've tried serving bigger fish, and people just can't eat. We serve a 2.5-pound, you know,
it's too much.
Bass. You just can't do it.
But no, you had boned this completely, left the head on,
yep.
Which I think is important for the flavor and the presentation, although you said you have to kind of coax people to
I was impressed when you were eating the inside of the head. That was awesome.
Oh, that's the sweetest part.
That was awesome. You'd be surprised how many people make us take the head and the tail off.
Oh, and the tail too.
Yeah.
And you stuffed it with?
Swiss chard, sweet onion, preserved lemon, and garlic. And then wrapped it in prosciutto, and then seared it. And then on the outside, we do a mushroom sort of cream, I almost want to say gravy, but not really gravy, more like a sauce, with chanterelles, oyster mushrooms, and pig's feet, pig trotter.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
It's another one of my favorite things.
Yep. And then just to sort of top it all off, we put a fried egg on top just to really, like, hammer the cholesterol home. Just to sort of, you know, richen it, and the presentation is really nice. And,
well, it was delicious. We had so much. We did not do dessert, but you have a whole separate menu of desserts, so that must be a big item here.
It's they go quick. We're very lucky to have our pastry chef, Danielle Pruitt, who works really hard to come up with these great desserts. She really focuses also on the seasonality. She has a lot of sort of classical influence. She has a lot of sort of stuff that's like really sort of so old that it's new kind of stuff. Super cool. And she does a great job.
There's blackberry upside down cake with honey panna cotta cookie crumbs and cream. Sounds a winner.
Oh, yeah. That's one of our best sellers right now, actually.
Yeah. And you have a lot of cheese. You do a lot of honey. I noticed there was a lot of honey at the market, too. And I understand there's no problem with the bee colony collapse here.
No, not at all.
Which is amazing because East Coast is suffering like crazy
right.
from it.
I've heard. No, we're very lucky to have, you know, the whole farm thing. It's all over the place. Afton Field Farm sells us honey, and it's at great expense, but it's completely worth it. And now we can't really use anything else except for their stuff.
It's called, what is it?
Afton Field.
A-F-T-O-N?
Yep.
Afton Fields. Well, and your cheese selection, of course, you also are blessed with having fabulous cheeses here.
Right.
You have Cypress Grove, you have Rogue Creamery. Beautiful stuff. Well, we had a wonderful meal, and I think that you already are booked solid here, just about. So
we're a little busy.
You're busy, and
so make a reservation. You're open lunch and dinner.
Lunch Monday to Friday, and okay. Then dinner 7 days.
Okay.
And you have a website.
We do. It's www.cladcommon.com.
Yes, singular common.
Yep.
Okay, and listeners. The menu changes all the time. You may not get what we had, but I guarantee it. I really almost never guarantee, but I can guarantee them a good meal here.
Thank you.
Chris, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And don't go away, because we'll be ready after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are again, and another interesting guest coming up, a wonderful place called Laurelhurst Market. The situation is becoming, I think, popular, and David Kreifels, you could maybe correct me if it's not true, is this wonderful situation where you have the restaurant and then a butcher shop run by the same people and feeding one another in the same location.
Yeah.
Now, is that a trend or not?
Yes, it is becoming one.
It is becoming one.
When we opened it, it was not. And that's not to say that we're trendsetters. I don't want to give myself that much credit.
Yeah.
But I do find it quite often now. When we opened Laurelhurst Market back 2.5 years ago or so, there was only a couple in the country that I was aware of. I'm sure there was more, but only a couple. There was one in Boston, I believe, named Meat, or the Butcher. The Butcher. And then another one, the name's escaping me. I believe it was down south.
Yeah, it's Cochon in Louisiana.
Yeah, well,
New
yeah.
Orleans.
That's not the one I was even thinking of, but yeah.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, so, but it's such a natural fit for us.
Yeah.
We owned a butcher shop across town before we opened Laurelhurst Market. It was called.
Now who's we? You said.
Oh, sorry. My business partners and I.
There's three of us,
yeah. Jason Owens and Benjamin Dyer.
You've been partners for this whole venture.
The whole venture. We Sympatica Dining Hall and Catering Company opened back in 2005, and I took over as a partner about a year and a half after that. I started as the sous chef there. One of the original owners left, and I took over his shares. And
okay, so you're also getting back to your background. You were trained as a chef in the culinary training.
Yeah.
And you've been cooking for years,
you said. Yeah, about 14, 15 now,
right.
Professionally.
And in fact, when we were here last and interviewed you in Wild About Game, your dish won the whole cook-off.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the dish was. You?
Yeah, well, it was a stuffed rabbit hindquarter,
and we also
took the loin off and stuffed that, wrapped it with chard.
Okay,
and served
I do
it on
remember
some,
it now.
Yeah, we
Beautiful,
served it on some tar-bay beans
yeah.
and some fresh beans, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it was a fun day.
So we are here at Laurelhurst Market Restaurant and Butcher Shop. And what section of Portland, Oregon are we in?
We're on the east side. We're on Burnside Street, which divides the city from south and north. So we're,
oh, I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Exactly. So
I have no sense of geography whatsoever. That's why I'm married to a geographer. So.
But we're on 32nd and East Burnside Street. So.
Well, it certainly looks like a neighborhood that's really getting very interesting. All the different shops, retail, plus restaurants and
definitely yeah, yeah. The number of restaurants just in this area has quadrupled in the last 5 years easily,
so you're in the right place.
Yeah, no, we are.
And how easy is it to get here from downtown?
It's on the same street, cross the Burnside Bridge and drive up a mile and a half and you're here.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a fairly accessible place, you know. That's, I think, why, you know, has a little bit to do with
Who uses your butcher shop? Do people come from all over town? Because everybody we talk to knows this place, loves the restaurant, loves the shop.
Yeah, our target demographic, obviously, for the butcher shop is the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest neighborhoods in Portland, and, you know, very quite established neighborhood too. And so those definitely are our target audience. You know, the people that will come by multiple times a week, you know, for their dinner. And in the restaurant as well, too. I mean, we wanted to open a place that could serve both as a destination restaurant for people coming in out of town, for people staying downtown, for for people that folks that might live on the west side. And also we wanted to have a menu that could be approachable for the folks that want to bring their family that just live a couple blocks down the street too. So we wanted to kind of have it all, and I feel like we're doing a pretty okay job at that.
Well, it's a big place. I mean, you're growing apples. You have an outdoor patio or a wraparound outdoor patio.
Yeah,
it seems.
Yeah. The bar opens bar, up to the
The bar
to the
seems probably it's pretty lively. Everybody looks very. They're prepping everything for a big night.
Busy night.
And it's Sunday.
I know. That's a great thing. I mean, I feel really blessed about that. You know, to have a Sunday and to have a decent amount of reservations on the books. And
tell me about this butcher shop. Though, what are those sausages homemade?
Yeah, all of our the things that I think we're most proud of in the butcher shop, other than the fact that we know our ranchers, we source our meat. We know where all this meat's coming from.
They're local, mainly.
A lot of them local. If they're not, we know a lot about them. We know their history. We know where they worked before they owned this ranch. And
so you got really high standards.
We do. We hold some pretty high standards for that stuff. I think the things we're most proud of that come out of that butcher shop are our pates and sausages. We have a bunch of really, really solid butchers over there that, that beyond just knowing how to cut a steak and cut a pork chop right on the bandsaw, they really know their way around some pates and sausages. They're all trained cooks over there. So a lot of time with butcher shops, you might get it seems like they maybe reach for flavors with putting blueberries or whatever in sausages and stuff like that, So
peaches,
this isn't that.
Peaches in other ways.
Yeah. So this isn't, that place. We like to get creative, but we keep the culinary traditions in mind when we do all these things.
Well, I'll tell you, the meat's pretty fine looking that I was looking at in the cases. In fact, Peter was entranced with that pork chop.
Yeah. Yeah. From Tails and Trotters. Yeah. We've been working with those guys for a few years now.
And they're here.
Yeah, they're local. They raise their pigs just about an hour north, just southern Washington. So.
And you have a list here at the restaurant of the cuts of meat that are available on the menu.
Yeah.
So this is real symbiosis, isn't it?
It is. It is. So when you walk into the restaurant, you're first greeted with this 10-foot butcher case, this cold case, and it's filled with 7,500 items and. I'd say a good half of those are featured on the menu in any given time. So there's a real connection there. You're seeing what is on the menu. We're not hiding anything from you. The steaks that are in the case cut are the same steaks that are back in the refrigerator waiting to get used that night for service. So
I mean, you have Italian cuts of beef and types of beef, and do you do heritage pigs and things too?
Yeah, every once in a while we do get our hands on those. We have a unique situation to where we do like to bring in, things for the restaurant. We can't bring in whole pigs all the time. We sell too much of certain cuts and not enough of the others,
So you said you like buy a whole lamb.
We buy one whole lamb every week
and then we supplement with
some shoulders for making sausages, or maybe the racks,
because there's lamb neck. I mean, I always love getting my hands on things like that.
That's a great cut. That's one of those cuts that is packing just tons and tons of flavor, but it's probably half the
per lamb.
You only get one per lamb, and it's maybe half the price of shoulders even. So, or legs. So, the whole theory behind this restaurant is there's, especially with beef, there's so many cuts out there that folks are just unaware of or, take for instance the teres major cut out of the shoulder. There's one in each shoulder, so there's two per cow, and it's basically just it's nicknamed a poor man's tender, because it mimics the tenderloin, but it is literally less than half the price per pound.
That's
so
wonderful.
So that's kind of our
until
theory around here.
Until it gets popular, and then right.
Exactly, you're right.
Well, we're going to be examining this menu and eating here tonight. What should we look for? I mean, tell us about some of your favorite items on this menu and tell our listeners a little bit about the details of how the seasoning and preparation.
Okay. Well, our menu is broken into several sections. So, it kind of reads almost like a brasserie style menu, in that, we have a really good deal of variety. We consider ourselves a steakhouse, but that being said, we take a ton of pride in where our vegetables come in, you know, come from all these farms from, you know, within 100 miles of here. So
Purse Lane, I just tweeted today that every place else, I mean, it used to be everything was garnished with parsley.
Yeah.
Here, everything's garnished with Purse Lane.
Welcome to Portland.
Which I feed Peter all the time from my garden.
Yeah.
Calls it a wheat.
Exactly.
Anyhow, so tell us more about the menu.
Well, so we have it broken up into sections, like I said. So on the left will be some hors d'oeuvres and things to begin and kind of get your meal started. Again, highlighting some more of our local produce and then what comes out of the butcher shop. We have a steak tartare there that we've been doing since day one, and that's just using some Piedmontese beef tenderloin.
Is it good?
I think it's outstanding, you know. We throw a little bit of vodka in there, and that just kind of gives it just a little bit
that
of vodka.
I've never
Gives it a little bit of backbone on the back of the palate, and it's not like an intense in your face thing, but it really kind of it just highlights the beefy flavor really
nice.
Wow,
I never thought of that.
And we put a little bit of farm yolk in there. We get our eggs from Shampooey Farm, which is about 50 miles down.
I'm very envious of you already, by the way, with all this product.
It's insane. My business partner and I went over to France a few years ago, and partly a research trip, partly a paid gig over there, and we found the south of France to be very similar in climate and, you know, and the bounty of what we're getting here. So Portland's a pretty cool place, I think. You know, but back to the menu. Sorry. A couple other things that I think are standouts there are the fried green tomatoes. We're bringing in green tomatoes now from a farm. Creative Growers, one of my favorite guys. We kind of do it two ways. We buttermilk soak and then bread the green tomato slices, just kind of, you know, that's a pretty popular way to do it. We do a little bit of piccolo-y with ours too, which is kind of like a Midwestern green tomato relish. So it's almost like a two ways on the green tomato.
It's almost a vintage dish, the piccolo.
That's one of my favorite condiments. I think it's great. So we do that with some confit pork cheeks. So we get the pork cheeks from Carlton Farms.
Oh wow!
Which is, you know, just another less than 100 mile away place. And I take the jus that settles down to the bottom of the pan on the pork cheek confit, and then kind of just add that to a creamy mustard vinaigrette right at the end. So it gives it like this really intense pork flavor on the back. But those are a couple things. So, you know, when customers come in, I kind of encourage them to get a couple things just to start the table out.
Yeah, how do you approach a menu this big?
Exactly.
There's so many things that I know right away that Peter's going to want.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
Well, the servers do a lot of that work. I tell customers to really kind of come in with a mindset of the style of meal you want. You could come in here and have a burger night and get a wedge salad, and at the same time you can come in here and have a pretty intense like steakhouse night, or you could come in here and just do all seafood. So you kind of have to, or a barbecue. So you kind of come in and maybe think about what you want for an entree. So you say you want the smoked Wagyu brisket. If that's the entree you want, the server's going to know to maybe suggest a couple things for an appetizer, suggest maybe a salad to go with that or a side dish that's really accompany that well. So our servers, they're not going to let you put together a meal that doesn't really make sense on the menu, and that can be done if you're left to your own.
Oh, I can see how I could just see it right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple combinations that on the menu that I would definitely not pair together, but that's where the server knowledge comes in, and we just don't let that happen. So,
well, I mean, this is a really pleasant but also a very exciting place.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be here. And I look forward to sampling the food. I would suggest, do you have your menu on your website?
We do, yeah.
I would suggest anybody coming should study it first, because there's so many yum-yum things that you're going to have to really make choices. So your website is?
LaurelHurstMarket.com.
And that's spelled LaurelHurstMarket. .com. And this is, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. All the Oregonians or the Portlanders, how do we say that?
Yeah, Portlandians.
Portlandians. It's Oregon. One of their favorite restaurants. And so I'm really looking forward to it. It's good seeing you again, David.
Very good seeing you. Yeah, it's been way too long. You know?
Yeah.
It's a couple of years ago we just met.
We already lined up a whole bunch of other places we've got to come back and try. So we'll be back again.
Oh, good, good. I would love to see you guys again and again. So.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And now it's time for another break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Thanks for staying with us. I think you'll be rewarded by our conversation with our next guest, Chef Kathy Wims, who I look forward to meeting for a long time, and you'll discover, as I did, that she's just as delightful as everybody had led us to believe and how she's been reported in the press. Here we are, Chef Kathy Wims of Nostrana. We're in such a beautiful space, I don't even know how to start describing it. We're talking to the chef owner of Nostrana in Portland, Oregon, and Kathy Wims, this is just beautiful. You started with a space that was occupied by a grocery store?
Yeah, it used to formerly be an Oregon grocery store chain called Keno's.
Well, what did you do to get it like this?
Well, my landlord had some amazing architects, and the architect also became our interior architect. But there was a drop ceiling, and exposed the ceiling, so it looks like an upside-down, like Noah's Ark.
It's
really, really beautiful. And then there's windows along two sides of the restaurant, so you can see the green space outside the restaurant. And they're big, beautiful windows that slide open, so you feel like you're almost sitting outside. There's a nice patio here that we see about 25 people. And there's many different colored umbrellas out there. My inspiration was the town of Vernazza in Cinque Terre.
You know
that beautiful little piazza, right, with all the colored umbrellas?
Right. Cinque Terre happens to be the one part of Italy that I hate.
Yeah, it's pretty crowded now.
It's just all these people with hiking boots. I couldn't stand this.
But
anyhow, let's start with the name of your restaurant, Nostrana.
Nostrana means literally ours, like yours and mine in Italian. But it has a second, more important to Italians meaning, I think. And that is what's local and from the very area where you are from. And with that comes a feeling that that's worth more, that it's of higher value, that it's better, that it's tastier, that it means more because it's from the place where you grew up.
Well, then you are not from Portland, Oregon.
Originally, I'm from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Right. You didn't cotton up to, I guess the funny choice of words, to Southern cuisine. You adopted Italian cuisine by osmosis almost. You are... sensibility is totally Italian.
Well, actually, I think that's really funny that you're thinking about that, because I do think a case could be made that there are some similarities between Southern food and Italian food. They're both historically very agrarian cultures, and both cuisines use meat more as a condiment than as like a giant ingredient like we do here in America. A case could be made there's a similarity between Charleston Low Country shrimp and grits and Venetian polenta and shrimp. The muffuletta sandwich actually originated in Sicily. So there's some interesting things. But that said, my mother and my grandmothers were both incredible Southern cooks. My mother actually cooked her way through Julia Child, so she was a great French cook, and she could cook almost anything. But I was—I fell in love with Italy when I was a Latin major in college.
Oh, I wanted to ask you about that. I thought that was the strangest thing I read in your bio, that you majored in Latin.
I
was forced to study Latin. Never would I voluntarily do it.
That's probably why, because in public school in North Carolina, they didn't offer Latin, so it seemed very exotic and fun to me. So I went when I went to the University of North Carolina, which is where I studied, I actually probably would have been an English major, but I went to my first English class, and there was like 45 people in the class. And I was also taking a freshman seminar, a classics seminar, and there was 9 of us in the class. And it was such a great class that I just decided, I'm going to be in the classics department, and I'm going to be a Latin major.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, no, that jumped out at me. I used to be able to say nursery rhymes. What are those things? In the land of Mother Goose,
Terra
Mater Sante.
In
Latin.
Didn't you tell me that you had a non-teacher who spoke Latin?
She did.
Did you speak Latin, Kathy?
We would read it aloud in class, but we didn't really speak it as a spoken language.
Yeah, well, she spoke it like constantly. I mean, we all had names. Poor Peggy Bridges was Miss Pontes. Really funny.
Let's go back to the food.
So it's a natural, though, then you would be kind of drawn to Italy, even through the Latin. And you say you see an affinity with the Southern cooking.
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes together. We were talking about my former restaurant, Genoa, which was a much more formal, special occasion, 7-course dinner place where people celebrated all their anniversaries and all their birthdays. And they came to, they expected like really elegant European food, almost more. Continental isn't the right word, but it was almost a little bit of that older sort of continental idea, rack of lamb and béarnaise sauce. And the more I kept going to Italy, the more I realized that wasn't really the Italian food in the first place, and it wasn't Italian food that attracted me. And I just really enjoyed eating in the little osterias and the trattorias and trying dishes that 3 kilometers away would be completely different or might not even have been heard of in the nearby little cheetah.
A different family.
Yeah, a different family. And I just fell in love with that. It didn't interface that well with the formality of my old restaurant. So this was my dream, was to do this and to really, to do Nostrana and to showcase the amazing, like, little regional dishes that you find in Italy.
So you went from North Carolina to where?
Well, I came to Portland by way of San Francisco, but I was only there for a year when I was 21.
Okay.
But that really fueled my love for food because there were so many restaurants.
So much there.
I spent all my money eating out, and it was fantastic. I still go to San Francisco usually 2 or 3 times a year just to eat.
Well, but you're always in Italy. I mean, you spend a lot of time in Italy, right?
Until I opened this restaurant, I was going once or twice a year. And I was there twice this year. I was there in October, traveling in Friuli. And
I love Friuli.
I love Friuli, and I love the food. It's so different
and
amazing. It's so beautiful and pure.
Lydia Gassianis talked us into going there.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know what to expect.
Peter told me that. I know.
Yeah.
I loved it. And we also were in a part of Friuli that's, well, it's Slovenia and Friuli,
right,
called the Carso.
Yes.
We traveled there this trip, and then we went back again in February. We were flown to Italy by the Consorzio of Brunello di Montalcino wine,
okay,
and they gave us an award for being Osteria of the Year. They do 3 awards each year. One is for a ristorante, so a more formal white tablecloth restaurant. One for an osteria, which is what we wanted, and one for an enoteca. And so we were the second people ever from America ever to win this award. And the other restaurant that won was Babbo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in years past.
Big time, yeah.
So
I know you're not a stranger to awards. I mean, you've been a Beard finalist. You've cooked at the Beard House. I mean, you've got all kinds of best restaurant in Arg. I mean, you have tons of awards, right?
Well, we have a few.
As I talk to more and more chefs, I find out that, I mean, they like the awards, but the thing that has become the major driving force among chefs and in restaurants now is this camaraderie that has really blossomed among chefs. Do you feel that too?
You know, it's really, in Portland, we're really lucky here. We have a really bright, happening food scene, many restaurants opening up. Successful restaurants in Portland are like owner-operated, chef-owned. But there's a real camaraderie between all the different chefs in town.
And
everyone's very supportive of each other. It's really...
But, I mean, it seems to be a magnet for talent,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
It's a great food place to be right now, Portland, Oregon.
Yes. Now, look at this menu here. Let's talk about a little bit about your most favorite things on this, what people could look at to possibly order when they come.
When we opened up, we were going to be a pizzeria because at the time, it's changed now, but there was really no really great pizza in Portland, Oregon. And there was certainly no Italian-style individual pizza. And so when we found this beautiful space, it's quite a large space, it's 3,000 square feet.
It's huge.
It just looked a little too big for what we thought a pizzeria would be, and so we actually expanded the menu. So we have antipasti, and we have primi, which is the pastas and soups and salads, and we have entrees that come from our wood-burning grill, almost for the most part, as well as pizza and dessert and other contorni. So it's kind of the menu is, it's kind of all over the map, and it's far the Italian map.
Yeah.
As far as my my favorite places in Italy, the places I've spent the most time, and my favorite dishes.
Yeah, pick a couple of dishes and do details. Our listeners love to hear the juicy details.
Well, every Friday we celebrate Fish Friday, in which we showcase usually like three or four different fish dishes on the menu. And today it's an antipasti. Is sole in saor, which is a very traditional Venetian sole dish in which sole is marinated, it's fried with flour and salt and pepper and olive oil, and then it's marinated with a vinegar marinade that has raisins and red onion and pine nuts. And
that sounds really sublime.
And then it was originally a way of, in old ancient times, of preserving fish, because the vinegar kept the fish fresher longer. And it's served at room temperature. And we're garnishing it with a little bit of purslane from one of our farmers. And it's just, I love to have this dish in the summertime because I just think it's so refreshing. So that's one of the ones I'd say I was super excited about. It might seem a little bit mundane because so many restaurants have insalata caprese, the tomato, mozzarella, and basil.
Right.
But we don't have it until we get the absolute best tomatoes. And then we run it like until the end of the summer and the tomatoes aren't good anymore. And our customers just love it. We make our own. We farm our own mozzarella for it. We have a wide variety of different heirloom tomatoes, so it's very colorful. The plate's like super, all different colors of tomatoes on there. We use really delicious extra virgin olive oil on there. And I just love it when we have it. It's like I could eat it every single night. I miss
You're
it for like two
on
months.
Olive oil,
yeah.
Aren't you?
Oh, I love olive oil. I live olive oil. Every
you use only extra virgin, right?
Only extra virgin. There's nothing else here in the restaurant.
I don't use anything else either.
Mm-hmm. I don't see why any point. Well, I always sort of like to joke that if you're going to eat something that has 120 calories per tablespoon, it better be really good. So why waste it on something tasteless?
Yes.
But yes, every December we do an Olio Nuovo, or the new olive oil celebration, where we fly in the just-pressed olive oil, and we feature...
California or Italian?
Italian. Last year we had a Sicilian olive oil and two Tuscan olive oils.
Yeah.
And then we do special dishes just with the new oil. We have new oil tasting, so like a wine flight, people can have an olive oil flight and taste the different olive oils. And we sell the olive oil for a lot of holiday gifts. People buy it for holiday gifts and stuff.
Now, do you have all these special events on your website?
Yes, yes, we do.
And it is your website?
Is nostrana.com. Yes. www.nostrana.com.
N-O-S-T-R-A-N-A.com.
Thank you.
Yeah, and just for the record now, you say your wine list includes some Oregon wines, and otherwise they're all Italian.
It's mostly Italian, and then with maybe 5% of our very favorite Oregon wineries, like Cameron and Metello and J. Christopher. But mostly Italian, and all over the map. Like, we have wines from, if not every region in Italy, every one but one or two.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's surprising now where quality wines are produced in Italy, where you never found them before.
Oh, I know. It's so amazing. In fact, I think the two really amazing areas where the quality of wine has, like, changed so quickly and the winemakers are so passionate is in the Carso, that area that we talked about near Slovenia, but also in Mount Etna in Sicily. It's a really, really happening area right now.
I always joke about Sicilian wines were always sort of not made very well, and they were always named after somebody's mother.
Oh, I know. I traveled in Sicily like maybe 25 years ago on my first trip to Italy, and there was there were three big wineries.
It was Maria Costanza. There's another woman whose name I've forgotten.
She's somebody's mother also. Yes.
Somebody's mother, undoubtedly.
But now
it's all changed.
I know, it's totally
now
changed.
Now you have wonderful wines coming from Planeta and all kinds of other makers too.
Planeta, Grace, Coase, Occhipinti. I mean, our Sicilian section on our wine list is like one of our most growing parts of the wine list. And customers in Portland are like, they love it. They love to try it. I think the wines from Mount Etna, grown up on the slopes of Mount Etna, have a nice acidity that I think reminds Portlanders of the Oregon Pinot Noir. So
that probably is true too.
Yeah.
So now we are in the southeast part of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
It's a neighborhood described as what? Southeast?
It's close in southeast Portland. We're really close to downtown Portland. Like, people who were working downtown and wanted to come here for lunch could get here in like between 5 or 10 minutes. We're just straight across the Willamette River from downtown.
Well, I just think it's delightful being here. I'm so looking forward to tasting the food.
Well, I'm really looking forward to feeding you.
Thank you.
More from Portland and the Oregon wine country close by next week. But until then, same time, same place. We hope we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.